News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
Weekday mornings at 7 on News Talk.
It is the Pat Kenny Show. It's Anton in for Pat. If you didn't hear it earlier on, we were speaking to Mark Tighe, the president of the Irish Airline Pilots Association. And obviously, if you missed that or anything else, newstalk.com, you can listen back to any item there. In a moment, we're going to be talking to Kieran Mulvey, the former Director General of the Irish Workplace Relations Commission. Before we talk to Kieran, though, earlier in the last hour, we were speaking to the Inspector of Mental Health Services in Ireland, whose new report reveals significant deficits in care, significant enough that they are having an impact on patient care and clinical provision, with problems in a huge amount of our acute services. And he was saying that we need to at least double the amount of money that is being spent on mental health services. We've had a huge reaction to it. For example, I'm a 52-year-old female. I've lived with major depressive disorder and generalized anxiety disorder for at least 30 years, with sporadic suicidal ideation and exacerbation postnatally. I attend public psychiatric services quarterly. It is at absolute best a prescription writing service. Other than 8 weeks of day attendance at an outpatient clinic in 2015 and 1 hour of cognitive behavioral therapy per week for 6 weeks last year, I have had to pay privately for all counselling I have ever received. I have zero hope of any quality of life. Another, with so much talk about mental health awareness and encouraging people to talk about their mental health, it is so frustrating to hear about the lack of improvement in the provision for clients. It's all just lip service. Families who have need of support of mental health services in Ireland do not need a report to be completed to know about the total lack of joined up thinking in the delivery of support to clients of the service. Well, if you have a view, you can get us on 53106 at a cost of 30 cent, or you can get us for free on WhatsApp 087 1400 106. Now, to the news that Aer Lingus and the Irish Airline Pilots Association are heading to the Labour Court this afternoon. May have some light at the end of the tunnel for thousands of Aer Lingus passengers hoping for a summer miracle. I'm joined now by Kieran Mulvey, former Director General of the Irish Workplace Relations Commission and consultant with the International Labour Organization and the European Union. Good morning, Kieran.
Good morning to you, Anton.
Kieran, the parties are going to attend the Labour Court separately. Aer Lingus attending with Labour Court officials, then IALPA attending with Labour Court officials. Can you explain how that process works and what it's likely to achieve?
Well, the chairman of the Labour Court, Kevin Foley, who's highly experienced in this area and has dealt with Aer Lingus disputes before, including pilots, and including the interim recommendation he made, he would be have a tic-tac, I presume, with the parties prior to them being called in. So I think largely the reason for separate meetings would be that parties can indicate to the court in private where their thinking is, where their positions are at the moment. And it gives both sides, both management and unions, an opportunity maybe to flex out their thinking and probably consider options that they're not in a position to discuss or consider in public. That allows, the separate meetings allow that kind of frank, confidential conversation to be given to the chair of the court and his colleagues without the other party being party to hearing what's going on. So the court would be in a good position to know the lie of the land, so to speak.
Now, my understanding was that we were already in receipt of a Labour Court recommendation which had been rejected by IALPA. So what new facts, if any, can be brought to change that? Or does the court just say, we've been here before, folks, go work it out?
No, they've done that previously, and it was an interim recommendation. And that interim recommendation did allow for the parties to return to the court for what would be considered a final recommendation in regard to issues. I think largely it will allow the parties perhaps the opportunity, and certainly the court may be saying this, them to tone down the rhetoric a little bit, the counter accusations between them, and the fact checking that's going on. So at least hopefully that would create an atmosphere for discussion and positive engagement. In all disputes, they grow organically and they're solved organically. Like, rarely do this when they start off from where they are, they rarely finish at that exact point subsequently. Undoubtedly, both parties are in a standoff position at the moment and there appears to be no compromise. But the Labour Court, as the Workplace Relations Commission, always has the expertise to tease out positions of the parties and come up with positive, imaginative solutions. So I think we have to look at the intervention of the court now being a positive one, even though it would appear the parties are very far apart. And it will be a difficult job for the court to see how they can narrow that gap if possible.
Is the court able to ignore preconditions? Because we've heard from Aer Lingus that productivity and flexibility were a red line, or were red lines that were set before they were willing to come back to the table. And likewise, IALPA had said that the 24% was, in essence, a red line from their perspective. I would assume that the court would have to say, look, we look at everything or we look at nothing.
Well, my experience in the past is parties come in with their positions. They're very determined around them. But as I said earlier, is that changes and potentially can change when they engage with the court and other options and other considerations are put on the table for either party just to say this is a red line or that is a red line. It's not conducive to a settlement. But both parties realise that at some stage there has to be a solution. There has to be a resolution.
Now, for the tens of thousands of passengers affected, speed will be of the essence here. How quickly do you expect, or is it likely, that we will get to some kind of decision?
Well, Anton, my experience would say fools rush in where angels fear to tread. These kind of predictions, I think the court will work very strongly with the parties over today, possibly tomorrow. It doesn't have a lightning rod solution. But I think in this regard, the work to rule and its impact is having such a devastating effect on people's holidays and business in the country, on our connectivity. And then the one-day strike announced for Saturday, I think the court will be trying to see, is there a position by which those positions taken by the union can be eased? And certainly, I think they'll be looking at the one-day strike on Saturday if there's a possibility that can be avoided on the basis of any progress that's been made.
But I'm right in saying, Kieran, that the decisions or recommendations of the court are subject to agreement by the parties. The court cannot issue a binding recommendation, can it?
No, not as only if the parties agree to a binding recommendation on the 1990 Act, and they both have to indicate that would be bound by a decision of the court. No, the court is an essential element of our voluntary system. However, the principles in the negotiations, both management and union, if they are in a position to be in receipt of a recommendation of the court and the court feel that that recommendation has the support of the parties, the principles in the negotiation, well, that's positive and would be positive. And one always feels if the parties are going out recommending a settlement to their principles, then that's likely to stick.
How quickly can industrial action then get unpicked? So if we do get to a position where agreement is reached at the Labour Court, how easy is it to unwind the work to rule, the threatened strikes, the illnesses that we've seen, all of that?
I think that would probably happen pretty fast. In a work to rule, if the decision of the union then that progress has been made and sufficient progress for them to call off the work to rule, I would say things would get back to normal before the weekend. But the problem would be for the rostering, scheduling that Aer Lingus would have called in. And they're also calling in wet lease arrangements. But one would say with goodwill and with good intent, and a lot of the issues surrounding work could disappear pretty rapidly.
Can I ask you about the manner in which this has been handled, Kieran? Because you mentioned the language that was used. You regularly see industrial disputes where you get the sense that the parties involved understand the dance and to some extent know that there are a series of steps that have to be taken, and then we end up in resolution. This seemed deeply personal. We had the pilots' union accusing Aer Lingus of personalised litigation. We had Aer Lingus accusing the pilots' union of trying to do maximum damage to the company and the passengers. There were allegations of greed against senior management. This seemed to be unusually bitter.
Well, I think one of the issues that arise, like I've been through pilots' disputes in the past with Ryanair and Aer Lingus and other disputes, where you get an organisation like Aer Lingus that is actually a community between cabin crew, baggage handlers, check-in staff, pilots. Like, to a large degree, it's different elements of a family. So they've all known one another for long periods of time. It's people go into Aer Lingus and it's a long-term employment. They don't tend to move out of it very early or very quickly. The second thing would be that this dispute has been through the pilots' own tribunal. It's been through the WRC, it's been through the Labour Court. So in that period of time of maybe almost 20 odd months of that period, you know, situations build up where individuals across the table sometimes take exception to remarks being made or comments being made, or they're under pressure from their own management or under pressure from their own members. You know, one of the issues here is people know one another very well. Sometimes it does lead to sometimes, unfortunately, personalized comments. I think we need to get away from that. They need to get away from that. I think, you know, there's a time in disputes where the issue is more important than the personality.
In that context, what's the legacy that a dispute of this bitterness leaves? Do people think, let us never go back there again, and there is a tenderness and all teeth and claws are drawn in? Or is there a lingering anger and a desire to reignite the fight?
Not really. If the outcome is acceptable, both sides and both can live with the outcome. A lot of that, what I would call negativity, dissipates very quickly. And people get on with the job and they get on with their daily work and get on with what they need to do. I've found in most disputes I've been involved in that any comments being made, some of them might have made myself in the past, during the course of negotiations, the people shake hands at the afterwards and usually say, look, we may have said something in the course of dispute. That's part of the process. We're going to engage positively and differently the next time, and let's bygones be bygones and get on with our work. That tends to happen in most industrial disputes. People then just sit down, get on with what needs to be done. They probably will need to look at what kind of industrial relations engagement that they will have in the future. Are the institutions and the negotiations that they have internally robust enough? And secondly, you know, do they need really to fast-track disputes quicker than getting them put on the long finger and remain unresolved, which then makes more difficulty in resolving them? So to have a negotiation period of that length nowadays, industrial relations, that period of 20 odd months, that doesn't happen. It shouldn't happen. And it's not good to have prolonged negotiations over issues that the parties themselves should clearly understand need to be resolved, whatever the price of whatever the issue, but they nearly understand that they can't allow that to linger and allow that to fester, as you've described.
Kieran Mulvey, thank you very much.
Not at all. You're very welcome.
So some prospect of a possible good news. John Galligan is with us. He's owner of Galligan Travel in Sandyford and undoubtedly has been inundated with worried customers, either trying to find out if their flights have been cancelled or trying to replace ones that have disappeared. John, good morning.
Good morning, Anton. How are you?
I'm good. Are you a little bit more optimistic than you have been given the news today?
Well, like on the drive in this morning, I was looking at the dull overcast day and I say this is the ideal day that people like to be hearing me talk about sunny holidays, but unfortunately not in this context, I think. The situation is that travel agents, we have been very proactive up to this. The trade organization, the Travel Agents Association, formed a webinars last week, and we've been keeping in touch, monitoring the latest news and finding out what's going on, and proactively calling our clients. So travel agents, where you book through a travel agent, will have a list of their bookings, will know what your flights are, and will know once we get the news from Aer Lingus whether it's affected or not. In that scenario, we're contacting clients and rearranging their accommodation. Those who are not affected, we're contacting clients and saying, look, so far, you're not affected, but we're going to monitor the situation. So as of this moment, all our clients up to mid-July have been contacted and are reassured, if I can put it to you like that. From there on, we have to look and see where this develops, how this develops, and hopefully sense will prevail and the whole dispute will just disappear and we'll get on with life.
The clients who are affected, how seething are they?
Well, they're very sanguine, I'd have to say. Now, in the case that we had one couple, for instance, an elderly couple who were due to go for a month to Spain in a couple of days' time. and we contacted them. Now, we said we can rebook you to this, that, and the other thing, but they said, no, we're just too worried. We want to just cancel, drop everything, and we'll come back when all this is over. So that kind of effect, you know, I feel very much for the elderly people when it comes to travel, because they get very stressed in situations like this. And it's a comfort to us to be able to say, look, we'll just get you your money back. Take the stress out of it, and we'll rebook you when all this shenanigans is over. So that's happening. The people who are really badly affected are the likes of the families who are, you know, there's a lot of people only get one holiday per year, and they would have saved hard for this. And there are a lot of people who are going to be badly affected by this, where they're just not going to get on their holiday. And they're the ones I think I really feel sorry for.
To what extent are you seeing that kind of chilling effect that you described with that couple heading for Spain, where people are now wary of booking with Aer Lingus?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the airline themselves have been saying their forward bookings have been down substantially since this thing started. So there's no doubt about it. It's affecting the airline business. The other side of that, the flip side of that, is, of course, the opportunism of the other carriers. So they see an opportunity, they're going to jack up their prices. And in some cases, prices have gone up from 200 one way to 450 one way, you know, around these dates as an alternative source. So, you know, the airlines, some of the airlines are going to make good money out of this. Obviously, Aer Lingus are going to lose a lot of money out of this, and they're going to have a lot of costs in terms of reaccommodating people and compensations and various other costs associated with this. So this is going to be expensive for Aer Lingus. So in some ways, it's a bit counterproductive for the pilots to be saying, look, these guys made 233 million. Aren't they great? I want some of that. And at the same time, damaging that profitability. And in the context where Willie Walsh was this morning was saying that in the IAG group, they don't regard Aer Lingus as highly profitable.
You obviously are tapped into the grapevine. What do you get? What's the feeling that you get about this return to the Labour Court? Do you think that both sides are coming to the conclusion that everybody else seems to be at, that this ends by talks and the sooner they start, the better?
Absolutely. I mean, as the older I get, the more I realise that world wars are started by egos. And there's an element of ego in this too, you know. We are very important. We need more money. On the other side, you have the airline saying, there's no way we're going to give you any more money. So ultimately, this will result in a settlement. And I think the airlines, the pilots themselves know that there's no way in hell they're going to get 25% pay increase. But I do feel in the ether that there's no support for them from politics, media, the public generally. I suspect the union movement is getting a little bit uneasy in its seats about the kind of demands that are seeing, and I don't see that public support for their movement. And I think ultimately, once that percolates down to the unions and to the pilot leaders, they're going to say, well, okay, we're not going to get it. We better get on with the negotiation here. The problem is, how long is it going to take for that penny to drop?
When the penny does drop and the negotiation does happen, John, trying to salvage a silver lining for this cloud, what is the chances that Aer Lingus will then feel we'd better sell these seats fast and we'll see something of a fire sale and some good deals?
I think there's always that in the travel business where there's distressed stock is what we call it. There is always a price initiative to try and bring it back. I suspect Aer Lingus would immediately do a seat sale of some kind to try and get the business back. But overall, this year, if you look at the pricing, prices of airline seats have gone up a lot. So, you know, the days of the low cost carrier are rapidly diminishing. And if you look at some of the prices now, personally, I've just bought seats to Lanzarote in July for 650 euros with an allegedly low-cost carrier. That's kind of what it was before the low-cost carriers came in. So I think it's all going to be relative. The era of really, really cheap flights are gone. And I think people are accepting that. And while there may be seat sales, flash sales, or whatever you want to call them, they probably will come in, but they will come and go very quickly.
John,
and as soon as the airlines feel their flights are filling up, they'll jack up the prices again.
Thanks very much for that, John. That's John Galligan, owner of Galligan Travel in Sandyford.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.